on House Committee and House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Today is Thursday, February 9th. Just so people know sort of what we're doing here, we are quickly going to deal with some bills we carried over. One is 4005, which we intend to vote on. The next is 4072, which we intend to carry over again because we're working on, we have an agreement, but working on amendments. So we're not going to take any additional testimony at this time on 4072 if you're here for that. And then if you're here for Wolves, 4158, that'll be at least an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes from now. So you don't have to listen to the rest. If you don't want to, come back or stay, your choice. That's Wolves, 4158. If you're here on 4090, there's going to basically be two hearings. One on the original bill that has to do with some issues that Representative Sheehan, it's his bill that he's brought to us. So we'll have a hearing and witnesses on that topic only. Then after that's over and everyone has said they hate it or love it, then we'll have a hearing on the amendments that I've got, and the same people who either hate it or love that can come up again. Just don't try and use your time on one to sneak in on the other, because you're going to get time on the other, and it'll make it easier for the committee to keep the issues separate. The fact that they're joined together is my fault. You can blame me for that, but I'm trying to clarify the two issues so the committee members can understand and not have them intermingled. So if you're here on both and you didn't get to sign up on both, we'll make sure you can sign up on the second one. So that's the plan. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4005. And this is the tax credit bill dealing with wolf and now cougar predation. You'll hear about the cougar part in the Dash 2 amendment here in a moment.
Right. You need an amendment to that on the Dash 2? Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 4005, we adapt the Dash 2 amendments to that as an appendage.
Co-Chair Esquivel moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 4005. These amendments, they, besides adding cougar, they also make it a refundable tax credit rather than just a tax credit.
So it clarifies that that it could be, it removes the definition of private creditor and says it could be killed by a wolf or a cougar. It says in order to qualify for the credit, the taxpayer would have to submit evidence that includes a finding by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife or a peace officer that the wolf or cougar depredation was the cause. And then it's refundable, as you mentioned.
Representative Jensen.
Oh, thank you. Yes, this is fundamentally the same bill that we had heard before. With the exception of Dash 2 amendments have been added to it. And the Dash 2 amendments do a couple of things. One, that does add cougar as to the list that ranchers and farmers who lose livestock to cougar could also seek the same type of redress that those who have had lost livestock to wolves. And we included in the language specifically those two animals, wolves and cougars. We did that because our able staff from someplace got the vision from maybe it was, you know, kind of an immaculate sort of vision that the definitions we had for wolves might not be inclusive enough, and therefore why not? I mean, if it walks like a wolf, it barks like a wolf, it howls like a wolf, and it chases cows like a wolf, maybe it's a wolf, let's just call it that. And, you know, that's a rather, you know, simple sort of thing. You know, those were just kind of cleanup issues then that we felt were needed in order to address the intent of the bill as I initially sent in to have it drafted, and also I think as members of the committee had voiced their concern in those regards. So I urge the adoption of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, further conversation. And just so you know, every moment we take now means people are going to have less time to speak per person, not just,
oh,
just so
thanks.
We're thinking. Because I know, I'm sorry, but we got a lot of people here on other topics, too.
Just briefly, thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, I support the amendment, and I think it's great work. I would just offer up to this body that one way we could not extend that tax credit is to have a bill that would allow certain counties to address cougar problems if they have a cougar problem and they want to, by allowing people to hunt with hounds. And so I just want to say that there is yet another way and reason we could save money.
True, and we will be addressing that bill next Tuesday, for those of you who are here for that.
Coming to a theater near you.
Yep. Okay, any further discussion on the dash twos? Any objection to the dash twos? Seeing none, the dash twos are adopted. Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I move House Bill 4005 as amended with the dash two amendments with revenue with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
It's okay.
Okay, so Co-Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 4005 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, then to revenue with a subsequent referral after that to Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion? Clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Johnson. Aye. Representative Schaffler. Aye. Representative Springer. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Cowan. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Johnson. Yes. Co-Chair Clem. Aye. Co-Chair Esquivel. Aye. The bill passes. Okay. Yeah, these two.
Okay, so I'd also like to announce now the work, just for our formalities, the work sessions on House Bill 4072 and 4158 will be carried over. Okay, 4090. Original 4090, the bill as it is without the other issues related to special districts and their issues with each other. Representative Sheehan, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4090. And Wand, sorry. Welcome, colleagues, to the House Committee on Ag and Natural Resources.
Thank you, Chair Clem, Chair Esquivel, members of the committee. I'm Patrick Sheehan. I represent House District 51, which is Clackamas, all the way down to Estacada, and we'll soon go all the way north of the division.
How do you do under redistricting?
I lost Corbett. Matthew Wand, State Representative, House District 49, representing the good heart of the universe, Troutdale.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to tee this up with a very, very short PowerPoint presentation that's just got some images in here to illustrate the problem that we've got. This bill addresses the developable land that's inside the urban growth boundary, but it's locked up because services are unavailable. And services, we're talking about water and sewer primarily. And they're locked up because of things like a geographic impediment, whether there's a rural reserve that's blocking the city from reaching a certain area, whether it's the expense of reaching there, if it's just so much distance that the city can't take in that sort of expense to get that to the developer, whether there's a political barrier, we all know that happens, or there's a failed annexation measure, as there is in Oregon City, that's specifically for that area, although we can see that this is going to pop up more and more in the Portland metro area. So the solution to this is to sort of erase some of the imaginary lines that we draw. And to illustrate this, I wanted to show you an area that is between, these are zoned exactly the same, by the way. This is Washington County on the left and Multnomah County on the right. This is a geographic impediment. They can't get services across here because of a rural reserve. Now, this development on the left has pipes. It has infrastructure. It has everything. It's just a matter of why aren't we allowing them to tap into it? Same here. Same problem. This is a slightly different problem. This is in Oregon City, where you have a city boundary. The green areas there are areas that are within the growth plan. They're within the urban growth boundary. And they can't develop there because of a voter-approved annexation. And, you know, however you feel about voter-approved annexation, it is stopping the planned growth that's been there forever. In talking with the people of Oregon City, the reason why annexation keeps failing is they fear the cost. of what it would take to develop that, and that the city, that they would somehow have to pay more, when we all know that that's not true. You pay system development charges and whatnot. So this bill would allow you, if you're in an adjacent jurisdiction, to get these services. This says that if the jurisdiction that you're in is unable due to those reasons that I mentioned before, if you're adjacent to those and the developer pays 100% of the expenses, and the service provider has capacity, and I think we're amending this to planned capacity, meaning not just the capacity that they exist, they have right now, but what that district has prepared for in terms of the size of pipes, the reservoirs, things like that. And the developer waives their right to object to a future annexation, because most of these developers want to be annexed into the areas, but for those reasons they can't, then they're allowed to connect and build. So I've heard the question, what about planning? Does that throw planning out the window? Well, these plans exist. Whether they're with Metro, they're in the Portland area, the county, private investment in these plans with these landowners that have purchased their property and plan to develop it, and they have spent lots and lots of money on these plans to develop their property. So this is a common sense approach. The growth is already planned. People like it when their governments cooperate, and people like it when property owners are able to use the land as it was intended. And we're just going to try to erase those imaginary lines, and the end result is hundreds of jobs. That's my presentation.
Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chair Esquivel, and members on the committee, colleagues. I would only add that we have a comprehensive land use system that is wildly complicated, that we spend tens of thousands of dollars each year in various areas throughout the state to put together comprehensive plans and to plan for growth and to decide where urban growth boundaries ought to be and to decide where we will have dense housing and decide where we will not have dense housing. And if all of those plans are not meaningful, then we have wasted our time and effort and our money. If we have these types of barriers that are preventing areas that are properly zoned to be developed for various reasons in the way that the local jurisdictions have asked, and if they are in full compliance with the law, then surely we can find a way to help make sure that all that money spent on plans actually comes to fruition. And this is our first effort at getting that done. I know that there are some concerns from jurisdictions. I'm confident that we can overcome those concerns. But first, we'd like your commitment that we'll be moving this bill forward so that we can put in the effort for whatever amendments are necessary to get the broadest possible consensus. Thank you.
Oh, and I think you need to identify yourself still.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Matthew Wallen, State Representative, House District 49.
Center of the universe.
Thank you. Yes.
Any questions? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you be, either one of you be opposed to putting a take effect date on this so this wouldn't interfere with specific annexation votes that may be happening in the near future?
I don't believe this portion of the bill has anything to do with annexation votes. I think you're referring to the other one that's coming.
As
far as I know, the effective date is more relevant than the other portion of the bill.
Well, I understand that.
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Schaffler, I have no problem with an effective date that satisfies your concerns, sir.
You.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a good bill in the aspect that, you know, I've heard so many excuses from some municipalities of why this shouldn't work. But when they're getting free infrastructure put in by someone. But I do have one question that I've been contemplating. I'm here. I have 5 acres that's in the urban growth boundary, which means it's been planned for in the future, and the numbers have been run. But we have the capabilities in order to expand in that area, so the planning's been all taken care of. Now, behind me is 25 acres. Now, if I put in infrastructure into that area, am I required to oversize it for future growth? Because actually, I'm the one that's initiating the growth.
I believe that would be the intent, is to
is that if you were running a pipe across somebody's 25-acre piece of property, you would have to anticipate that, yeah, that service line would have to service that property as well.
Is even the oversized. No, I'm talking about, let's say I needed a 6-inch pipe, but with 25 acres in back of me, I'm going to need a 24. It's going to be more costly with the 24. Do I, as the developer, just bite the bullet and pay for that if I want to go ahead with it? I don't have a problem with that.
Reaching back into my hat from when I was a city councilor, what I recall is that each city or county has their own ordinances that describe oversizing pipes and whether or not the existing SDCs would be used to pay that cost, or whether you would be charged for more, or whether a future developer would be charged with oversizing that pipe. So they have that laid out in their ordinances and comprehensive plans and things of that nature, my understanding.
Follow up.
Okay, and the reason I'm talking about this is because it starts getting into credits and what have you on systems development charges. So, but you thought of that then?
That's the intent of this, yes.
Very brief. Representative Shoffler.
Representative, I know you met with my water authority. I'm on their budget committee still since 2001. I understand, or I heard that you will be putting some language together to address their concerns. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Dave Honeycutt will be speaking to the amendments. Okay. We have several amendments, and we are looking to aggregate those into one so you're not dealing with five different pieces of paper. But yeah, we talked to Kim today, and we're confident that we can include the things that she is concerned about and address those.
Thank you.
Another amendment, just so folks know who I've talked to, the bill is intended to be amended to only apply to the metro region.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other questions for these nice gentlemen? While I've got you, I don't expect you to come back on the other one. Do you, either of you, have an objection at this point to the attachment to your bill of this other issue that I've been working on?
All of my support is for the bill that I put forward, and I don't care what else is in it.
Okay. I just want to be polite, polite.
Within reason.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Okay.
Better qualify right.
Have a GMO.
No. Do we have any other members? Cliff's coming back. Okay. So I'm going to call up the next folks on the original 4090. We try and bring up people of like mind so there's no temptations to wrestle at the podium. So I'm going to ask Dave Honeycutt, Scott Berry, and Sean Jillians to come up, who are kind of the proponents, and then we'll bring three of the opponents up right after that and try and keep some peace. Oh, also, yeah, we have 42 people on all variety of topics here today, so try and keep it to 2 minutes or less. There will be questions potentially, but try and keep it to 2 minutes per person, please, everybody.
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Esquivel, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of House Bill 4090. I've brought Mike Nelson with me, who's a resident of Bonnie Slope, and is one of the pictures that you saw with the houses on 3,000 square foot lots and the open area that's also inside the urban growth boundary that we can't develop deals with the Bonnie Slope area that was brought into the urban growth boundary by Metro in 2002. Let me talk a little bit quickly about the bill, since I know you're under a time crunch, and then Mr. Nelson's brought some maps, and I think you need to hear from him. He's the real life situation behind what we're trying to solve. What this bill provides is that for properties within urban growth boundaries, we're not talking about land that's outside the urban growth boundaries, for properties that are within urban growth boundaries that our planning system prescribes are to be developed at urban densities. It's urban land. It's brought inside the urban growth boundary, and that policy call is made. Once that policy call is made and the property is brought into the urban growth boundary, if there there are services available, but the service, the existing service provider is either unable or unwilling to provide those services, another service provider can provide those services, then under this bill, the property owner can ask that the services be provided from the service provider that's willing to provide them, provided we pay the entire cost of doing so, and provided that we are willing to enter into an agreement to annex our property into the, either into the special district or the city, if it's a city that's providing the services. So we're willing to pay our, we're not asking for a subsidy. We'll pay the cost to provide the services. The service provider has to be capable of providing the services in that situation. And if the property is within the urban growth boundary, then we feel as if we should get those services. And this bill actually allows that and carries forward the intent of Senate Bill 100. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Nelson.
Welcome.
Chairman Clem, or Co-Chair Clem, and Co-Chair Esquivel. My name is Mike Nelson. I live at 12401 Thompson Road in Portland, Oregon, and my property was in the very first picture that was brought up by Representative Sheehan in his power presentation. And I've come today to testify on behalf of this bill because I'm a property owner in Multnomah County, but I am surrounded on two sides by Washington County, and I've provided you with a map where you can see the Bonnie Slope area that's in the middle of that map is actually just the corner of Multnomah County that borders where Multnomah County and Washington County step through the western part of the area there. I happen to live in the very bottom left-hand corner of that, and that was represented in that picture where all those houses are right next to my property. I'm stuck there between jurisdictions that are either unwilling or unable to deal with the situation. The area is commonly referred to as Bonnie Slope, which is less than 5 miles from downtown Portland. It's also just north of Beaverton. When I moved there nearly 20 years ago, it was clearly rural land. It was an old Christmas tree farm that hadn't been farmed since the 1970s. My daughter was involved in 4-H. We had horses in the barn. It was definitely rural land. During the 1990s, with the really dramatic expansion in Washington County, everything to the south of me and to the west of me was filled up with dense subdivisions. And then in 2002, with the expansion of the Portland Metro Urban Growth Boundary, about 160 acres of Bonnie Slope was brought into the urban growth boundary, including my 8 acres, which is the Bonnie Slope West area that's represented in that map, where area 93. That's the 160 acres that was brought into the urban growth boundary. I supported that decision not just because it made my property more valuable, but the nature of the land is different. And the fields that we used to ride horses in were now densely populated subdivisions. There's a grade school less than a quarter of a mile from my house that has 800 students in it. And this is primarily the result of this. I mean, since that time, there's been no property inside Bonnie Slope developed. And that's primarily because Multnomah County doesn't do urban planning. They've delegated all of that to the City of Portland. City of Portland can't provide it, and Washington County doesn't do it because it's out of their jurisdiction. So you can sort of see the picture. I live in Multnomah County. Multnomah County has delegated all that to the City of Portland. City of Portland can't do it because they passed an ordinance in 2005 that said that they won't expand their urban services outside the city boundaries. Washington County won't do it because it's outside their jurisdiction. So we're stuck in this situation where nobody is willing to deal with it. But yet, all the other services in the area, you know, the fire, if there's a fire at my house, to Walton Hills Fire and Rescue comes. My kids go to Beaverton School District in Washington County. I pay Beaverton school taxes. You know, if there's a problem with my house, the Washington County Sheriff shows up. So why are these other services not able to be provided to my property? Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming down, sir. Scott.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Berry, members of the committee on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders Association. And I just want to briefly open by saying, Mr. Chandler, I know you're watching. You owe me one. I do codes, workers' comp, and other related issues for the home builders and not land use. So he's unfortunately down in the Florida area doing, I'm sure, some very tedious work. Having said that, outside difficult, inside easy. I think that's what we all understand Oregon's land use system to be designed to accomplish. HB 4090 simply gives land caught in this predicament the ability to acquire needed infrastructure from the most appropriate service provider. Under the bill, there's no subsidy for the property, as it'll have to pay the full cost of development. It will allow property to receive water, sewer, and other needed infrastructure, again, paying the full price of doing so. It does not create new development rights or increase development intensity or change planning or zoning. The bill will simply help further the original objectives of Oregon's land use system. Developed inside, protect outside. You could even argue, frankly, that by being more efficient inside, we're decreasing the amount of expansion outside in the future. Finally, I would just like to say, in response to Co-Chair Esquivel's question, I believe current policy for most municipalities on expansion or moving from that 5-acre property into the 25-acre parcel, in your example, you would typically oversize those pipes to handle that additional needed infrastructure down the road. The reimbursement from that cost would come from SDCs on that 25 acres. That's typically how that's done. Thanks.
Cool. Happy to answer questions. SDC credit.
So, and just one clarifying question to make sure I understand. When you say full cost in the bill, that would include whatever SDCs, infrastructure. You know, we're not trying to get out of something in particular. We're saying, meaning the cost.
That's correct. The SDCs will be imposed at the time of the development application. We can't get to the Bonnie Slope folks can't get to the development application because the sewer and water stubs right to the end of their property, right to the end of their property. But Washington County won't go 2 feet into Multnomah County to provide them with the services. Once the services are provided and we get the sewer and water, then they can master plan the area, submit their development application, and the governing body responsible for the development for processing the development application can impose whatever SDCs it chooses to impose.
One other quick question that I had. This isn't a sort of sidestep the question of voter-approved annexations. These are voluntary or hostile annexations. These are voluntary property owners who aren't going to be annexed because of this bill. Nothing in this bill annexes anybody into anything. It just is about service delivery. They sign a non-remonstrance agreement. If they don't want to be in a non-remonstrance agreement, they will never ask to use the provisions of this bill anyway. So there's no way this could be claimed to somehow compel people to be annexed against their will.
That's correct. The purpose of this bill and the reason that we added language to the bill that required the property owner requesting the services to agree to a non-remonstrance agreement to annex in was so that if a district, a special district, or a city was providing the services outside of their territory, then they'd be free under whatever applicable procedures they have to require the annexation. Now, Representative Schaffler asked a question about the Sunrise Water District. They've made a point that they're unable to annex on their own. They have to get additional permission from the city of Damascus and from Clackamas County. Anyone who's familiar with the city of Damascus knows that it's quite a mess, and Damascus is having difficulty with Sunrise Water. So what we propose to do is amend that language to make sure that if it's the special district, Sunrise Water, for example, providing the services, that they can require with the non-remonstrance agreement, they can annex the property on their own.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So on the alternate side, I'm going to try and go back and forth so everyone's getting equal time. I'm going to ask Janine Rustad, Stephen Kafori, and Robin Freeman to come up. And if I incorrectly have you as opposed at some point in your four, tell me that, and I'll rearrange. I'm trying to on the fly put together pro and con panels. Please, Janine.
Mr. Chair.
Or you want to go first? Sure.
Mr. Chair, my name is Stephen Kefour.
2 minutes.
I'll have most of my 2 minutes give to Janine, if I may. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kefour. I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. These are the land use planners in the state. Just very briefly, this is a bill, like a lot of bills that come into the legislature, where somebody has a problem, they go to their legislator, legislator introduces a bill, and then it comes to a hearing, and then people say, wait a minute, that's a really interesting idea, but it has unintended consequences, and that's the purpose for having a hearing like this. We wish that we could have been asked early on in the game, can you help us draft a bill that will take care of our problem? It's too late for that now, but we're still willing and eager to help work out a solution that takes care of people's problems without making a mess of the laws. So I'd like to introduce Janine Renstedt, who is a certifiable smart person who understands this stuff. So,
thank you. Welcome.
Janine Renstedt. I am actually here both on behalf of the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association, and I also am wearing, I have two separate testimonies I'll combine.
Thank you.
On behalf of the city of Hillsborough, which is, I'll start with that, we are Oregon's fifth largest city. We're a full service city. Washington County went through a very difficult process under Senate Bill 122 to get urban service agreements. The city of Hillsborough recently was received two UGB expansions, both to the south and the north. Both of those UGB expansions abut the Tualatin Valley Water District. We are working with TVWD to reach agreements where, if we need tie-ins, we can get those, but it'll be under city standards. That way, when we transfer the service to the to city lines, that everything's in place. This bill could circumvent such agreements, and talking to our planning director, essentially undermine or interfere with existing contracts. You have our written testimony on behalf of both organizations. We see this as interfering with the city's ability to plan. I can tell you for the South Hillsborough area, there's many years of planning to make sure we're right-sizing everything. This could allow someone to jump the queue, barter between the city, TVWD, get their best deal, which could create inequities. It, again, circumvents agreements and contradicts Goal 11 for the efficient and economical provision of services. As Mr. Kefour pointed out, that this is unfortunately a bill that's meant for one problem, but the interference will be statewide. When we discuss this at OAPA, one of our members said she cannot think of a city that this won't affect in the state of Oregon. As you have our written testimony, I'll leave it at that, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs. My name is Robin Freeman, and I'm here today on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I'll jump right into the concerns that we have. First, I'll state hate is a strong word, but we strongly oppose this legislation. And I am speaking to the base bill and the Dash 5 amendments. I'd like to focus on a couple areas of the bill. We feel that at this time, the cost recovery provisions in the bill do not align with the provisions of urban services, that they are tied specifically to bringing sanitary sewer and water to the property. In addition to this, this becomes an issue because the bill compels the service provider, which could be a city or a special district, to provide more than sanitary sewer and water services. It appears to apply to all urban services, and if you look in the bill, there's a pretty good list of urban services, which include fire, parks, library services, I believe, roadways, a number of things. So the we feel that it's a bit remiss. We understand that the intent is to pay for all costs, and there's been a lot of discussion about SDCs this morning, and I'm not an expert, but you will be hearing from Oregon City. They'll be coming up, I hope, right behind me and be able to talk specifically to the issues that I'm concerned with today. SDCs are charged at the time a building permit is issued for new construction. And if this new construction is not within the city limit, it is within the county's boundary, those SDCs would not be paid to the cities, and they would not help support the cost of the infrastructure. And we think that that's an important component that isn't being addressed correctly here. I know that there's been some comments about annexation and that they don't apply, but I think that this this bill sort of ignores the fact that we have approximately 40 cities that have annexation authority for the voters to approve annexation. And I'm running out of time, I realize that. We feel that those voters' needs aren't going to be addressed, and that the person that agrees to be annexed or that waives remonstrance will be a builder or developer and not the homeowners that are the future property owners that give up those rights. And we think that that's a huge issue in this bill, and it's going to cause great angst. So with that, thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. And we'll see you again probably under the other part, some of you at least maybe. Okay, back to the other side. Sean Gillians, Sean Cleave, and I'm going to ask Randy Tucker to come up, though I know you're not in favor of it, but we're sort of into the neutral category, and I know you've got a funeral to go to, Randy, so wherever you are in the overflow room, please join us. Sean Cleave and Randy Tucker, please. All right. Go ahead. Sean, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Gillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, defenders of the state's land use system. Ironically enough, when you see this panel up here, Mr. Chair, I think you can see that there is an issue that needs to be addressed here. Under our existing statewide land use system, of course, urban areas are supposed to be developed at urban densities. We're seeing a few areas around the state where that's not occurring because of the services provided. I think this bill is a good bill going in that direction. We certainly understand that there are some unintended consequences in the original bill, and we've been working with Representative Sheehan on amendments to limit those impacts, but we are in support of the underlying bill, Mr. Chair. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thanks. Other Sean.
Co-chairs, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing Oregon Farm Bureau in support of 4090. We believe that this bill, for all the reasons you've heard in support, is a very interesting concept and is consistent with Oregon's land use planning system that prioritizes land within inside the UGB, taking pressure on unneeded UGB expansions. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony and answer any questions you might have.
Great, thank you. And Randy, who's not signed up as four, but you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah. Chair. Though this is Randy Tucker. I'm Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. Always happy to appear with my friends, Mr. Cleave and Mr. Gillians, as we have many times before. The Metro Council actually has concerns about this legislation. They wanted to just put some on the record, and happy to answer any questions afterwards. Unfortunately, it's a complicated piece of legislation, and unfortunately, my own certified smart person, our staff attorney, is not available today, so I'll do my best. First of all, as has been mentioned, you know, this is very complicated legislation to be considered in a short session. I'll stop with that point right there. It seems to have been drafted in response to some very specific situations that are not typical of the overall urban development process in the Portland metropolitan area, and yet it applies universally throughout Metro's UGB now and in the future. Our concern is it undermines rational planning for development in areas that are brought into the UGB. It's apparently not limited to residential development either, but it seems to apply to areas that have been brought in with the aim of providing for employment. The region, as you know, just achieved an unprecedented milestone with the adoption of urban and rural reserves. And the areas that have been designated as urban reserve reflect the region's interest in efficiently using land over the long run to accommodate future population and job growth. The agreement that we made with the counties to adopt those reserves includes a commitment to completing concept plans prior to future UGB expansions. These plans would help us to develop efficiently while creating great communities that support both local aspirations and also the goals that the region has as a whole. These concept plans would include agreements about which governments will provide both governance and urban services to the areas added to the UGB. And with these plans in place, we don't expect any future areas like some of the ones that you saw in the PowerPoint presentation. Yet, House Bill 4090 would undermine the efficient development of some of these areas by... I'm happy to go on, but my time is up. Should I continue?
No.
Okay.
This bill is probably not going to get voted on today anyway, so okay. We may have to take more information after.
I'll just say I'd be happy to have a more detailed conversation at your convenience.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions for these nice gentlemen? Great. Thank you. So I've got, I can't quite read the last name, Tony, maybe Kinkle, something, please, and Doug Neely. And then I think that's Carol Cheserek. Perhaps in the overflow room as an against panel. And then after that on deck in the, well, one against, one neutral is Mike Eliason and Hasina Squires. Then we should be done with this portion of 4090.
So, I'm Doug Neely. I'll go proceed with his permission. Proceed first.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Doug Neely. I'm the mayor of Oregon City. I've been on the City Council for a total 12 years because the term limits, there's a break in it, but I've been on the City Council all through the period of time that the current urban growth boundaries have been established. I was involved in all processes of that. We have three urban growth boundaries that are expansions that we have before us. Two of them have already gone through a comprehensive plan. The city invested $500,000 in those comprehensive plans. It seems like you're talking about water and sewer services. Every one of our urban growth boundary expansions are areas in which all of the residents, or almost all of the residents, will go through Oregon City to go through anywhere. That's because of the geographic nature of it. So it's not only sewer and water, it's streets. Our planning director here is going to address the SDC question in a bit. Well, I want to point out to you the two that we have actually brought in to the urban growth boundary and have had the concept plans approved were approved in 2006-2007. The total amount of land in the urban growth boundary is 1,450 acres and represents a potential 23% increase in the city of Oregon City. 85% of the voter-approved annexations have been approved. And of my knowledge, prior to 2008, 100% of them that went to the voters had been approved. 2008 really is when the housing market begins to change dramatically. People in the city see subdivisions that have been approved, partially developed up to 10%, and have vacant lands over this period of time. I think the city commission has forwarded them to, majority of the city commission has forwarded this to the voters. But the point is, when they see that we are not able to develop lands that are currently inside the city, why would they want to say, let's bring in more lands inside the city when we can't develop the ones in? I think that's the reason for the voter rejections. And that's a quick statement of what it is, but I saw the pink card go up. I'd like to talk a little bit more, but the point is, it's not only water and sewer.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, co-chairs and commission. Thank you for offering the opportunity for me to speak today. My name is Tony Conkle. I am the Community Development Director for Oregon City. Building on what has been said tonight in opposition to this bill and the concerns that have been raised, I'd like to bring up some specific examples since I'm the one who gets to implement the state and metro and all those other other requirements that we see. As our mayor said, this bill would immediately make available over 1,400 acres of county lands that are our 20-year land supply. And that's important because this is for our future growth. There is no requirement that once you are in the UGB that you get to build the next day. This bill, as proposed, circumvents our charter requirement that the annexation questions go to the vote of the people. The folks that are impacted, the local jurisdiction that is impacted, because while, yes, the developer will pay to provide the services and put in the streets on their property, it ignores the fact that there are other impacts throughout the city that will not be collected. And an example is if this, another voter annexation is denied, the services are provided, and these county lands, which are 20-year land supply, are able to develop at urban densities. One, those SDCs that are paid for will go to Clackamas County. They will not go to Oregon City. And through these concept plans, we have identified all of the infrastructure that is needed, transportation, sanitary, water, storm, parks, and included those in our city system development charges. Those will not be collected. So either the citizens of Oregon City need to subsidize those improvements that are needed to accommodate this growth right outside our city limits because they could not get annexed or accept a lower level of service. Also, in concerning the non-remonstrance, what you see is that one developer will sign a non-remonstrance. That property will be developed at urban densities. 99% plus of those homeowners will not know what non-remonstrant means or that they have given up their right to determine if they can be annexed into a city. We have seen this throughout the region that post development annexation is difficult and does not work. I've outlined some other issues that we submitted into the record. I'd be happy to answer any questions or expand on those if you wish.
And I've got a few questions that may help you get a little more time too. So, Representative
Shoffley. Thank you. When you develop inside a city, you pay for the improvements in that development and adjacent to it. Could you? And I think that's part of the problem. Couldn't you write something in here to where they would be not just inside their development area, but also have to improve with Oregon City SDCs adjacent to? Would that solve your problem?
I don't believe it would, because in Oregon City's case, we have three state facilities that go through our town, 213, 99E, and I-205. And some of these, our concept plans account for the full development of those properties in the 20-year planning horizon, and our SDCs are reflected to make those improvements. If you allow in one parcel and they build 40 lots, legally, proportionally, you're not going to be able to get them to make the needed infrastructure improvements elsewhere in the city. And then the other concern is, who has jurisdiction? Clackamas County has their own master plans, and they collect their system development charges, which are applicable to the county. I'm sorry.
No, please.
And the city has our adopted master plans, and our system development charges are based on that. Who pays? And there was an excellent point brought up about the oversizing. We would certainly hope that the oversizing of the infrastructure needed to implement the concept plan is put in, but who pays the tax? Who pays the SDC credit? Or does the developer pay that whole bill for the oversizing, which you typically don't see because it's a city master plan, it's city SDCs, but the county would be collecting them.
And Mr. Chair, briefly, the landowner that was up here, clearly there's a problem there. We need to solve it, and I would hope somehow we could. And Mr. Mayor, it's good to see you again. Selfishly, I sure hope you build that Cabela's one of those days, because it's like a Disneyland for
fish. It's not my fault it's not being built.
I understand. Thank you. It's good to see you.
Coach Rascoval.
Thank you. The particular, you don't have off-site improvements as part of your permitting process?
Yes, we do. But it's proportional to the impact that's being created. And if you...
Correct. So they are paying for off-site improvements. You do make them pay for the roads, do you not?
But it's
sidewalks.
It's on their site. But what we would not require them to go off-site and put a sidewalk on an adjacent property that's not part of the land use application, of which there's probably not enough right-of-way. So we would be in a situation where we would have to condemn the land and exact the land for them to put that sidewalk in. They're responsible for the infrastructure improvements along their frontage and on their property, unless it is of such a scale that you can justify off-site improvements. But with these smaller subdivisions, it's hard to get an exaction for off-site improvements, which is why we need the SDCs to make those improvements at a later date once the development comes in and is efficiently developed.
Could I also make a comment, if I might?
Sorry, no, let me referee here, because we do this in an orderly process.
You're not refereeing anything. Yeah.
I know, you're my co-chair. What am I going to do? Gavel you down? Do you want to follow up to that point?
Oh, I'm fine.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
I do.
This city's different.
Representative Shoffler.
The co-chair had it right. You can require off-site improvements adjacent to a development. I just heard you say that you you couldn't, and maybe I misinterpreted you, but correct me if I'm wrong, you can mandate off-site improvements on property adjacent to a development. You can impose that on the developer. Is that correct or not? I believe it is, because I was on city council for 4 years. That's where I met Doug. When
as long as you can justify the Dolan and Nolan argument.
Okay.
Can I make a comment on that, too, though?
Quickly, please.
But yes, it's the SDC thing. Say that we have to actually change the capacity of our water system or something to solve that area. SDCs, I think, are partially intended to permit that to happen. The county's collecting them. We're not getting them.
Okay, other questions? Okay. Actually, I do have one. Nothing in this bill compels you to actually override the annexation question. If they sign a non-remonstrance agreement and your voters have told you no, you don't have to initiate annexation proceedings. You would just end up having to hook them up to services. But there's nothing here that would override your annexation vote and cause these people to be annexed. That's a city action to take that you could choose not to if you choose not to.
We understand that.
It's a question.
Okay. Yeah, I know it's a question, but I would just simply put the argument, yes, we could do that, but they're still going to have the impact on our infrastructure.
Yeah, I understand. I just want to get the record clear on the annexation part of it only.
So correct. If development occurs in the city through our charter process, the voters decide not to annex it. That's right. We are not compelled to extend our city limits. But you create inequities not only in the SDCs, sure, but also in the taxation. They will be taxed at the county rate. They will be adjacent to the city. And the city tax rate, which is higher, provides those urban amenities and infrastructure that they'll be utilizing and putting a demand on.
Could I just make one quick point?
We have a large section of East Salem that's unannexed, so I am very familiar with the debate about annexation. I just
One quick comment. In Oregon City, the focus seemed to be on voter-approved annexations. That's what I heard in terms of presentation. If that's an issue, maybe you can take on.
We have difference of opinion as legislators on that topic, obviously.
Yeah, but that's only one part of the that's only one piece of the issue, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, fair enough.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Then I've got Mike and Hasina, Mike Elias and Hasina Squires. And I don't have anybody else on the underlying 4090. If you are here for that, I don't have you. Please somehow make yourself known to the staff. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs Esquivel and Clem, for the record, and members of the committee, for the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I did not check the box, apparently. We do not, as an association, have any problem with the bill, House Bill 4090. I want to make that clear. Special districts provide services within and outside cities throughout Oregon. We follow locally adopted comprehensive plans and local and land use planning laws. Many of the areas where there are conflicts between property owners in UGBs happen because there are no urban service agreements. And I'm very pleased to hear the cities bring up this issue of urban service agreements. Attached to my testimony is a little memorandum about Senate Bill 122, which was enacted by the legislature in 1993 that compels entities to enter into urban service agreements. And where we find areas that have adopted urban service agreements, we don't usually have these issues because we plan, we discuss, we talk, local governments get together, we figure out who the service provider is going to be. And we are strong, strong advocates within the Special Districts Association for urban service agreements. What can you do for us to help us with this? So I'm going to use this bill as a little bit of a platform to adopt urban service agreements. Please find out from Department of Land Conservation why it is they're not enforcing these urban service agreements to be signed and adopted. This statute was enacted, as I said, in 1993, and signing those agreements could go a long way with addressing frustration of property owners, just like this bill is attempting to address, who are stranded and are not able to receive services from a city or a special district. A couple of things that I want to touch on really quickly, because I did see really quickly, a piece of information distributed by the City of Oregon City. This bill will not result in the creation of additional special districts. There's a specific process to create and form a special district, and a property owner would have a very high bar to reach to try to find, do the feasibility study and county commissioners and hearings. There's, it's not just an easy, you would just create a special district. And finally, I'll just terminate by saying that we don't disagree with the right of voters to approve annexations, but somehow property owners who are in this situation have got to have a mechanism where they can get services, and we think that this bill provides that opportunity to those stranded landowners.
Thank you. Mike.
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Esquivel, Mike Eliason, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm seeing what you have the rest of the agenda. I'll be extremely brief. I think just about all the points I would cover have already been covered. I will just say our association respectfully opposes this bill, at least in part on the grounds that this is a sort of major policy change that probably is best served not going forward in February. But if the intent of the bill is to start a robust discussion about annexation laws and urban service delivery in the state of Oregon, we very much support that conversation moving forward. So with that, I'll close and
okay, great. Carol.
Thank you. I'm Carol Cheserek, and I'm sorry I missed the call earlier. I live in Multnomah County near area, the infamous Area 93. I've also spent the last 6 years closely following development of the community plan and financing plans for another nearby UGB expansion area, North Bethany. What I learned from that process, that planning process for North Bethany began in 2006. This is land that was brought into the UGB in 2002. Late last fall, they finally approved a community plan and a financing plan for North Bethany. So it took them almost 10 years from the time that land was brought into the UGB to finish that planning. What was clear to me from that planning process, though, was the importance of planning that new community as a whole, and the importance of planning the financing for all of that infrastructure also as a whole. There was a small area within North Bethany that was developed ahead of the rest because there had been a pre-existing plan, pre-existing agreement. It's a long story. I don't want to try and explain it. But time and time again, there were problems and issues with that one area that had been pre-developed. Oh, the road wasn't big enough. Oh, things didn't connect properly. Oh, they didn't want to be part of the overall financing plan. It's very difficult to come up with the right amount of SDCs to build the kind of community services we want for our new urban communities unless you do it across the entire new community. You can't do it on a piecemeal basis. Multnomah County does not do urban services. We got out of that business, I think, smartly in the 1980s. This bill would take us backwards. Area 93 does not have an adopted urban plan or zoning. It does not have an adopted funding plan. So if you approve this bill, all you're going to do is allow people to take their existing parcels, 1 to 5 acres, run urban services to them, and do what? Build new homes for wealthy people, to build big mansions. And then when and if this land eventually does develop, you've got these huge homes on these large parcels that don't want to redevelop at urban densities. So you're actually creating a situation where you're going to have less efficient development, you're going to have a hard time getting efficient infrastructure, and you're going to have a much harder time getting your financing plan worked out and approved. None of this is easy, but I don't think this bill is the right way to solve the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Okay, so that was 4090 original bill. In deference to time, even though I'm the original bringer of these amendments, I'm not going to use a bunch of time so we can instead hear from the public. The one person I did want to bring up was our legislative counsel. While he's walking, I'll use 15 seconds. So there are long-term ramifications of the amendment in question, and there are short-term. What triggered my interest in this happened to be some emails about something going on in my area. It has since spilled out into other areas. We've got some emails today from another part of the state where Junction City is also having the same issue. So Gordon is our legislative counsel for these issues. I went to him in January describing a particular situation you're going to hear a lot about, which has to do with here in Marion County. And I asked him you know, what his interpretation of current law is to see whether what was being attempted was even currently legal. And so we had a conversation in January. I wanted him to hear, you to hear what he told me in January about this situation, to answer your question, why are we as legislators dealing with this?
Thank you, Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Esquivel, members of the committee. My name is Gordon Howard of the Legislative Council Office. There are two statutes involved. Representative Clem brought the situation to me involving the city of Kaiser. ORS 222.520 says that when a city is incorporated or annexes a portion of a area that's within a, also within a special district, the city essentially has the choice of whether to continue to allow that territory to be in the special district or to withdraw it from the special district. The assumption is that the city would then be providing that service directly, although there are cities that do contract for services separately that don't provide them directly. The situation with Kaiser, as Representative Clem pointed out, involves a secondary use of another statute in Chapter 198, the special district's section, 198.866, which would allow the city of Kaiser to then try to annex the property that they've withdrawn from one special district and put it into another special district. And then looking at that statute, it's clear to me that the intent of the statute was for generally for an entire city to put itself into a special district. And I, in a previous career, worked for a city that did that, disbanded its fire district and annexed the entire city into the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue District. And so my opinion that I expressed to Representative Clem was that this was, at minimum, a very creative use of two disparate statutes in a way that was most likely not intended by the legislature when these statutes were put together. The ORS 222 statute involving annexation was originally adopted in its current format more or less in the late 50s, and the special district statute was done in 1971 as part of a large-scale reorganization of those statutes. And I'm not necessarily saying that this action that Kaiser is proposing is illegal or contrary to statute. I'm just saying that it is certainly a very creative use of those statutes, and that was my impression that I gave to Representative Clem at that time.
Great. Thank you, Gordon. Any questions for Gordon? And thank you, Gordon. You can excuse. And that was my issue. What I heard, maybe not your intent, and there's a lawsuit you'll hear about. That begs the question, what is the legislature's intent? And love it or leave it, we are the legislature. And so that's why this issue is coming up. Not that Kaiser's doing something illegal, but they've opened up an interesting question that at some point we're going to have to clarify one way or the other, whether now or later, in my view. With that, I'm waiving the rest of my time. So I'm going to ask the two sides to present themselves here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher's here. Does she want to speak?
Oh, yeah, please, if you would like to. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't see you.
Sorry, I didn't see her.
Either. Yeah, we missed you.
She been?
Well, I may have to take my time back now. We'll see. Representative Thatcher, please. Welcome.
Thank you. I know I have to state my name for the record. Kim Thatcher, representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, which covers Marion County also and Yamhill County. So this is just a real fun place to be. Excuse me. Now, I, by the way, support the underlying bill. That is not why I'm here. However, I do think there are many confusing issues that need to be addressed in the present annexation and urban service provision laws. I believe that we should have a more in-depth discussion about those issues and work on them in the months ahead. At this point, from the language that I've heard, I don't know which particular amendment will actually be moving forward, but I cannot support what is being proposed because of the short-term ramifications you alluded to earlier, Representative, and the fact that it would interfere with the upcoming election in Kaiser. I don't believe it's right to change the rules midstream, especially when there's something as expensive as an election coming up, and it could go either way. There's also a pending court case. It could go either way. Let those things play out. Meanwhile, let's have a thoughtful discussion about some of these concerns and come forward with some thoughtful legislation next time around. I That's about all I have to say. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Questions, Representative Thatcher. Representative Schauffler.
How about, Representative, thank you, take effect date of January 1st. Would that, the court case be done then? Do you know? And there's no possible to predict that, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because the election would be long since passed.
Yeah, I know that the emergency clause that you're, I think is what you're referring to, would really, you know, put a monkey in the wrench of things that are in process right now. The ballots go out in 2.5 weeks, I believe. They're being printed. Changing the rules of the game would be expensive for the
city. I don't think this bill has a chance in hell to pass in the Senate anyway, but it's my humble opinion.
We will discuss that with the Senate President and the rest of the senators if it becomes necessary, Representative Schauffler. Any questions for Representative Thatcher? Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to ask Kevin Henson, Mike Wetter, and Rhianne McDonald to come up. After that will be Bob Blackmore, Shannon Johnson, and Chief Cowan on the flip side of the issue. Oh. Okay, so I'm only going to be able to do three. So if you want to have Commissioner Carlson, why don't you come up, and Chief, and Mike. And Rhianne, if you would hold off a moment. Okay. I didn't notice we had another elected official in the room. Sorry about that. We're missing them all.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Callan.
For clarification purposes, are we addressing a specific amendment that's in front of us?
That's six.
Thank you.
Good question. So, Chief Henson.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem, Chair Escobar. My name is Kevin Henson. I am the Fire Chief of Marion County Fire District 1. I passed out written testimony for myself, as well as City Councilor Dave McCain, that's in front of you. Marion County Fire District 1 has faithfully served both the City of Kaiser and the Clear Lake area for decades, with origins back to the 1940s. We are opposed to the City of Kaiser and Kaiser Fire District's attempted boundary change and understand that the primary purpose is to take away property tax money that currently goes to Marion County Fire District 1 in an attempt to balance the Kaiser Fire District budget. We do not believe the City of Kaiser should be allowed to mislead the voters, particularly since the City of Kaiser does not provide fire or emergency medical services protection. It is not fair and it is not right. This fight was not brought upon by us. 2 years ago, I approached the Kaiser Fire District with multiple models to jointly improve our service delivery to both fire district constituents. Kaiser Fire was not interested. As you will likely hear today, this issue peaked after we added an additional paramedic ambulance to the Clear Lake community. That ambulance service serves Marion County Fire as well as the City of Kaiser. You heard me correct. When we added service to the City of Kaiser at our own expense, the Kaiser City Council and the Kaiser Fire District became upset. We have tried repeatedly to compromise and have been consistently rejected every single time. On December 9th, the Kaiser Times offered a public compromise in an effort to avoid this costly debate. Marion County Fire District 1 publicly accepted that offer, but again, the offer was rejected by the Kaiser Fire District. Copies of that offer and the response have been distributed for you for review. On a personal note, I feel the fire service is far better than this. It's embarrassing to come before you and talk about this. We shouldn't be spending precious taxpayer money between our fire agencies. We should be working cooperatively and not fighting legal battles. Our primary mission is to serve and protect. To do that, we have volunteer and career personnel that respond at a moment's notice. We obviously have a budget, and this unsolicited attempted boundary invasion will threaten our ability to carry out our primary mission. If the Kaiser Fire special election is successful, we will lose over $500,000 per year. And without a doubt, this will have a negative impact on our service delivery to all of our customers in Marion County. The system is not broke today, and I urge your careful consideration of the proposed amendment. I appreciate your time, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Carlson, do you want to?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. Want to make it very clear, I am here today speaking for myself. This is not an official county position. The board does not have a position on this issue. This situation puts Marion County in a very difficult position. Like you, looking at the interests of the state of Oregon and balancing competing interests, we at the county level look at what's good for the county and balance competing interests. We don't look at what's best for any one jurisdiction. And when we're looking at fire service and ambulance service, we're concerned not only about people that live in cities, but people that live in the sparse rural areas that also deserve fire service. Kaiser's Rural Fire District is having budget problems. So is Marion County, so is the state of Oregon, so is everybody. The Kaiser Rural Fire District identified an area that would provide them a greater tax base. Kaiser City Councilors acted on their legal counsel's interpretation of a statute that we now see is unclear. However, its historic intent has been to facilitate mutually agreed upon boundary changes. The Marion County Rural Fire District took the matter to court to challenge the city's interpretation of the statute. Within weeks, the Marion County Commissioners received a letter from Kaiser Fire District's legal counsel stating that the commissioners needed to send the matter to arbitration so that the two districts could split the assets. Upon receiving this letter, my question was, what happens if we don't act? The answer was, from our legal counsel, they could take us to court. I said, is this the same court that is trying to determine whether the statute is clear or not? So we have not acted on that letter. Meanwhile, there will be an election in March, as I understand it, of the entire city of Kaiser. So how does one mount a political campaign to explain the nuances of this situation? In 2002, right after having been elected a county commissioner, I was invited to the Salem Fire Hall about ambulance areas. The then fire chief pointed to a map on the wall. There was a small area in East Salem that had been annexed into Salem. He said the ambulance boundary should follow the city boundaries. It was in my house district. I knew there were lots of seniors that lived in that area. Seniors get reimbursed by Medicare. I learned a lot during that contentious battle in the months that followed, and by the way, the city was not awarded that area in the updated boundary plan. So now when someone asks me that question, I say, so would you like to take the rest of the district along with that area that you're looking at, including the sparse rural areas where they need service? Usually the response is no, that's not our problem. Well, it is my problem and is my constituents' problem. So we can all wait for the court to rule, and my guess is the judge will likewise view the present language as unclear, or the legislature can express its intent more clearly to the benefit of Oregon citizens. There are better ways to resolve these kinds of issues. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair Esquivel, Chair Clem, members of the committee. I am Mike Welter. I was born and raised in Oregon, and after serving our country in the Air Force during the Gulf War, my wife and I returned back to the state of Oregon. We have lived in the Clear Lake area for 6 years and been in the Kaiser area for 16 years. I am currently the president of the Vineyards One Homeowners Association. This forest annexation issue started with a letter from a fellow homeowners association signed by three of their board members. After our board became aware of this forced annexation issue, we sent out detailed questionnaires to both of the fire districts and then met with each of the districts. This was an attempt to sort out the facts by our board. All of the information we gathered was emailed to our residents. After extensive research into this matter, our board does not support the forced annexation attempts by Kaiser Fire District. We are happy with the current fire service provider. Even the city council has stated this is not an issue of service or lack of service. We do enjoy top-notch emergency services provided to us by Marion County Fire District 1. There was a petition with well over 600 signatures from citizens happy with the current service levels provided by Marion County, and this was ignored by the city of Kaiser during public testimony on this forced annexation. The city of Kaiser could have made a choice to let our voice be heard. They could have allowed a double majority vote. They could have allowed the voice of Clear Lake residents to be heard, but they did not. The city wants to allow 16,000 voters who do not have a stake in the outcome to determine our fire service. The result is our vote will be diluted roughly 10-1 with all the Kaiser residents. We do not fear a fair election, but that is not what the city has allowed in this matter. The Clear Lake residents will get one vote in this matter. The rest of the voters of Kaiser living within Kaiser Fire District will get to vote twice. How is this fair? There have been several thousands of our taxpayer dollars that have been wasted in this government-on-government battle. This is not in the best interest of the citizens of the city of Kaiser, citizens of either district, and ultimately the citizens of the state of Oregon. I guess I'm out of time.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? So one question for you, Chief, and I'm going to ask the other chief the same question. there's obviously longer-term implications of whether cities should be withdrawing people from special districts in order to have other special districts serve them beyond the Kaiser issue. But as Representative Thatcher said, she's, you know, interested in this particular election. So the way we deal with that is effective dates of these things. So one question I've got is, if in this particular situation, given it's been going on for a little while and it's not hypothetical like this bill would be otherwise, if the solution we came up with was to change the terms of this election, meaning it would still go forward, the election would occur, but it would be what he just suggested, which is the Clear Lake area would vote and the Kaiser Fire District would vote, would you all be able to live with the outcome of essentially it having to pass in both Kaiser Rural Fire and Clear Lake on its own without the rest of the city of Kaiser County, but just Clear Lake straight up and Kaiser Fire straight up?
Chairman Klim, thank you for asking that. That is the precise request that we made of the Kaiser City Council. We believe that the Kaiser Clear Lake residents should have an independent say first. So, yes, we would support that.
Thank you. And to be fair to the Kaiser City Council, there is nothing like that in statute now. They couldn't make that choice if they had wanted to. So that's where we would have to assert ourselves to help bridge the gap here between the two sides, I think. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
So the other chief, Cowan, Shannon Johnson, Bob Blackmore, please, on the opposite side.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cowan.
For the record, we do not believe there's any family connection.
Yeah, right. No. As far as they know, no genealogical ties.
Well, we're not sure.
Well, nobody's ever completely sure.
Might find out that's one of your long-lost cousins.
So whoever would like to start.
Good afternoon, Chairman Klem and Co-Chair Esquivel and members of the committee. My name is Bob Blackmore. I'm special counsel to the City of Kaiser and also to Kaiser Fire Department. On my left is Shannon Johnson, who is city attorney, and on my right is Chief Cowan, who is chief of the Kaiser Rural Fire Protection District. We come to you today to clarify a few things and to voice our opposition to what is now Dash 6. We have submitted to the committee written testimony in opposition, and it references Dash 3 because that's what we had at the time, and Dash 6 came out sometime today. I haven't seen Dash 4 or 5, so I cannot address those. I don't know what is there. I think the problem that we have here, and we don't object to the underlying base bill, but the problem that we have is that the Dash 6 amendments are designed to retroactively address city decisions with regard to services within the city and to affect the March 13th elections and also to affect pending lawsuits. In presenting this, because it is so bulleted and so targeted to this particular issue, all the stakeholders in this matter have not been brought before this committee or have even been consulted so far as we know. And because of that, it hasn't been thought out, it hasn't been addressed, and we believe that there will be unintended consequences. We think it lacks clarity as is currently presented, and it overreaches. And one of the things that is of great concern, and I see I only have 30 seconds, is the fact of it will probably impact a city's ability to deal with who provides services. I want to make sure that the committee is aware of the property. This neighborhood is already within the city, and the city is trying to make determinations of what's in the best interest of the entire city and trying to decide how it will provide those services. There are about 5 different ways to do it that are detailed in the letter to you. This is going to limit a city's authority to direct those issues. And I want to point out that this is not just district versus district. This is city actions. I have a lot more I could talk about, but my time is up, so I'll defer to Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Co-Chair Klem and Co-Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. I wanted to echo Mr. Blackmore's testimony and also particularly that this is not an annexation of new property in the city, except for a few acres here and there over the last 20 years. All of the Clear Lake area is in the original boundary of the city of Kaiser. The city has concerns over 2 different service providers. I will mention that there is no question that Marion County provides
good service. But the question we have and the question we want our citizens to vote on is, should there be one service provider for all of the city? There's different protocols with regard to fire hydrants. The city takes the lead on emergency management and incident command. Dealing with two different districts instead of one causes some concern there. And frankly, the main concern that we have is that these amendments present a significant attack on the Home Rule Authority throughout the state. These amendments would prevent the city from asking its citizens who should provide these critical public safety services within its own boundaries. This is contrary to the philosophy of Home Rule Authority. It's an attack on local control, and it's simply bad policy. So I appreciate your time. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
And the chief, please. Oh, I'm not sure you ever said your name for the
record. I'm sorry. I think Shannon Johnson, city attorney.
Thanks, Shannon.
The chief is here to answer any questions you may have, and we'd be happy to answer any questions. There's a lot more here that hasn't been addressed.
Sure.
If I could take the chief's time for a moment, I'd appreciate that.
That's fine. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You have 2 minutes.
Well, I started out talking about the... The lack of definition, and it talks about a city will provide, and it doesn't define how a city provides, whether that's through IGAs, whether it's through joint operation, whether it's through withdrawal and direct service, or through its own fire department. And that lack of definition goes to the core of some of the issues that have been raised here today with regard to the legal clarification of what a city can or cannot do. With regard to cooperative effort, the problem is that fire districts are working great with cities in many ways, and there are many ways here that the city's working great with special districts, and this could impact how that goes forward in the future. Does a city, in order to have control over some of its own services, have to have its own fire department, or can they do, as Swan Valley does, for example, serve a number of different cities? There are other fire departments that serve cities. In this instance, you have a fragmented service delivery model. Also, with regard to 8667, the subparagraph 7, where the neighborhood in the city would have a veto power over a city council's decision as to what's in the best interest of the city. Clearly, a city acts on behalf of all of its citizens, and they're asking for you to give a neighborhood the ability to veto a city council's ability to decide what's in the best interest of the entire city. So that is not something that is helpful, we don't think, in the long term of trying to work cooperatively with all of the special districts. The fire hydrant matter that Mr. Johnson referenced is of concern. They're adding changes there. Finally, I just note it is a complex issue. There are many stakeholders involved. There are many special districts, not just fire districts, or water districts, or park districts. You can go on and list them all. They're all going to be affected by this. The current legislation provides a thoughtful process by which parties can move forward on this, and that, in fact, is what the city has done in determining that it's in its best interest to move forward with this matter. It affects tax base, it affects provision of service, coordination of service. So if there is going to be a thoughtful process and look at this, it needs to be involving all stakeholders and a much more thorough and deep analysis than what is before the council at this point in time. Thank you.
Okay, questions? Representative Schaffler.
So how do we get that poor fellow services to his property, if not this? Very quickly, because the chair is impatient with me for asking so many questions already.
Representative Schaffler, we have addressed only the amendments to this bill. We have not addressed the underlying matter and that particular issue. Mr. Johnson may have some comments on that at City Council.
We don't have any comments on the base bill.
Okay.
So,
Representative, I beg your pardon. I believe you had questions for me.
Yeah, I did.
For those.
Although I will defer to my committee member, Representative Bill.
I've been sitting here quietly for quite a while now. I have 16 years as a volunteer firefighter medic, and my husband's the chief of a small rural district. And we would be happy to see this many people show up at any of our calls.
Thank you.
I do understand some of this issue, and hopefully we can find a way to make everybody whole in this and make sure that people get their services and the mutual aid tenant goes forward without any angst.
So the question I had, you may have answered it, but I wanted you all to consider this. So as you know, I came to the Keyser City Council prior to placing it on the ballot and urged you not to move forward with the election. I know you're not the Keyser City Council. I urged them not to move forward so you didn't end up sitting here saying you're interfering with an election. It was late. They chose to go ahead with the election anyway. But I came and said, you know, we may need to look into this. So now that you all are in one situation, and the bill covers obviously in perpetuity the rest of the state, I think we're looking for some way to resolve your situation that is fair to where you're at in the process. And people who haven't yet even begun a process, maybe that's a different solution because you've spent time and money. And obviously, some other people feel you're hostile invaders. You feel this is your right. So it's a tricky situation. So the question, I think you answered, but the question is, what about, and this is in the dash sixes, but there's other provisions that would not allow for this to occur. If we did an amendment that only said the Clear Lake folks are going to vote which special district they want to be in, and Keyser Will Fire is going to vote on which special district, whether they want the Clear Lake folks or not, could you live with that? And if they decide they want to join you, they join you. If they decide they want to stay, then they stay. Could you live with that?
No, sir. And thank you, Representative Clem. Jeff Cowan, Keyser Fire Chief, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to respond to that question. You came into this situation very late in the game,
yes,
sir.
We're
over a year into this situation. We tried Senate Bill 122 agreements. We had an intergovernmental agreement in place at the time, and that was terminated by Marion Fire. That termination was a hostile move that caused Keyser Fire District to lose the ambulance revenue, that caused a problem for Keyser Fire District. Keyser Fire District approached the city for a review of these circumstances that it's in the best interest for all the city of Keyser. We now have a pending vote before the city of Keyser and all the personnel here. And the reason that that vote would not be effective is that you would nullify the current vote that is presented before the personnel, and you would create a new situation with a new style of vote. And as you heard testimony here, that there are 600 people's names on a petition. However, those petitions were gathered by volunteer firefighters going door to door in uniform telling people the fire station's going to close. I'd put my name on that petition, and I'm sure Representative Boone would agree with me. And I'd like to take a moment to recognize Keyser Fire personnel behind me. Keyser Fire personnel, volunteer, career, administration, and the city of Keyser are all in on this issue, working together to solve this problem, which we believe the fundamental principle is let the people vote to solve this issue, and that we believe that should clear it up.
If I could respond directly to your question also.
I think I got the answer I need, and I've got a bunch of other people. If the answer is no, and I understand your position. Thank you. Any more questions for these nice folks? Okay, thank you. Senator Edwards, Representative Gilliam, would you like to join us? The two most handsome men in the building seem to show up.
One's a straight man.
Welcome, Senator, Representative.
Are you talking about these two?
I've heard they won a voting contest that they're the two best.
Well, I must have stuffed the ballot.
Apparently, you're not short on time.
Sorry. So,
I'm sure that we were.
Since you're in the House, why don't we let you go first, Representative Gilliam, and our former colleague, who's a senator, can wait politely, like the senators sometimes never allow us to do. And I asked him to come down here, too.
I just look forward to the opportunity to get gaveled down.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Vic Gilliam, District 18, Silverton, Molalla, and other parts. I'm here mainly because I represent large portions of rural Marion County. So that's the first thing you need to know about my point of view on this. I don't represent the city of Keyser. I have a great deal of confidence, and I won't take you through all the reasons why, and a lot of respect, not only for county fire in Marion County, but also for all firemen. So I'm sorry that we're sort of pitted against each other, but I would say this, and often on these matters of very complex legal matters between municipalities, I'm called upon, and often people are disappointed that they called on me. But I believe that if, in fact, we've left something out, if there's a, if you want to call it a loophole or a strange opportunity, then I think you should act. Because I don't want us to leave something undone in state statute that pits these districts against each other. And I understand times being what they are, that you have to look for every opportunity that you have. But if it's not fair, I don't think we should do it. And that's why, as difficult as it is to inject ourselves at this stage, whether it's late in the game or not, I think it's appropriate, if you feel like there's a problem here, I do, that we should act despite what's going on currently in Kaiser. So I am firmly for the position of Marion County Fire. And I hope that that adds some weight to what you're going to do. I think you have a number of people testifying. I was watching on television. You all look good in person, but you look better on TV. And and I have to say that my commissioner, Janet Carlson, gave you an awfully good summation of the county position. Even though it wasn't the official county position, she's awfully well informed on this. Those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Edwards, thanks for coming down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Chris Edwards, State Senator in North Eugene and Junction City. This issue, actually, I haven't known about this issue for very long, but it affects my district as well. We have the three parties involved in Junction City are the Junction City City Council, the Junction City Rural Fire District, and the Lane Rural Fire and Rescue District, which services outside of Junction City. As we've built and are advancing toward building the state hospital south of Junction City proper, what has been Junction City proper, Junction City has annexed miles and miles of land down to where the state hospital, I hope, will be someday, and has started putting in infrastructure. And of course, as they've annexed, then they are looking at the possibility of removing that territory from Lane Rural Fire and Rescue, which was making plans to service the state facility, and they're, it's my understanding, are moving forward with plans to put that to the special district, the fire district that services Junction City proper. Now, I mean, it's just straight up, you know, taking tax base from one special district and putting it at another. And of course, the tax district that is, or the fire district that is servicing Junction City proper, would require, it would be a financial shot in the arm for them. And so, you know, I just am not convinced that one city being able to do that for the benefit of the fire district that services that city. I'm not convinced that that's the best level of government that this should happen at, and that's why I've generally been supportive of the bill concept. This stuff is moving fairly quickly, but for right now, that is, I do believe that we need to put some restrictions on the process.
Sure. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. Yeah, this has given me a headache. I want to help those property owners get their services. It's ridiculous. And this whole annexation and jurisdiction is a nightmare. We have two union shops banging at one of their heads. That really pains me. But, Senator, if we don't have the support for the take effect date, January 1st, 2013, could you get that stuck on there in the Senate? And that would that... Because clearly there's a problem here, but we have an election here that I think we should let play out. That's my opinion. Could you give me some reassurance that you could get a take effect date of January 1st, 2013? That would be well after the election. Come back, and then we'd concur on it if we don't have the support in this committee for it.
I appreciate your question. I couldn't commit that there'll even be a hearing on this bill in the Senate.
That's my opinion too. Okay.
I can't commit to that right now.
All right, thank you, sir.
Right, and Senator, your concern, I assume, is not with the Kaiser issue. It's what implications this particular potential legal strategy for how to do it might cause in your area.
Yeah, it's the model. that's playing out in Kaiser is becoming the model for now in my district.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Great, thank you. Okay, so it's hard for me to figure out in some of the cases who are for and who are against, so I'm just going to go back to the list. I know this isn't against. Janine Rustad, again, from City of Hillsboro. And Joe, I think it's Eagle from Marion County, I believe is an against. And then how about Linda Ludwig, who I know is an against?
She's got Sean O'Taylor.
I'm seeing her.
She's here.
Great.
Linda here?
She's
here the whole time.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm actually going to pass Janine Rustad.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Sean, did you want to join Linda? So Sean, Linda, and Janine. If I ended up getting a pro and a con, don't punch each other. Sorry. I'm doing my best here. Janine is passing. And Joe Eggle, why don't you start while we wait for Joe?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It's Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I want to just move the discussion over from this lightning rod situation here and let you know that we represent the interests of 242 cities statewide, and we're concerned about the amendments. We oppose them because of the consequences to all cities and districts statewide and the individual nature of these situations. 242 cities, over 900 districts statewide. Each of those situations are a little bit differently. Play out a little bit differently on the ground, and the Dash 3, the Dash 6 amendments would affect each and every single one of those situations. Also, real quickly, like to address the Junction City issue head on, because I think the implication has been made today that there is a landslide of these kinds of situations that are occurring statewide. Talked yesterday to the Junction City's city manager. Council has not even begun discussions on this issue in Junction City. They're approaching it, gathering information. I believe they have some representatives listening today. But I was told definitively that this is not anything that's going to happen in the near term. They're very interested in keeping relationships between the districts as congenial as possible. So I want to state that for the record. Really and truly, what we see happening in the last decade statewide between cities and districts is that cities are giving up, relinquishing providing services and having special districts provide them rather than cities continuing to do so or eliminating district territory. So I think if there's a trend, I would very much like to point to that trend on a statewide basis. I think I'm going to stop there and let Sean continue.
Sean, please.
Mr. Co-Chairs, member of the committee.
One second.
Yes, sir.
Could Oksana make her way up? I believe maybe Mr. Eagle had to leave. So, Oksana, please make your way to the other empty seat. Sorry, Sean.
No worries, sir. Thank you. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I'm Sean O'Day. I'm the general counsel for the League of Oregon Cities. I think I'll begin where your legislative council began, and that was with the 520 provision related to what the presumption was as to whether or not a city would directly provide services when a city takes an action, much like the city of Kaiser has that you've heard about today. I respectfully submit that this is one of those areas where attorneys are going to disagree. And although it is certainly up to the legislature to set that intent, the current wording right now does not clearly express an intent or a presumption that cities would do so directly. And there's good policy reasons for that. Specifically, a city has a legitimate interest in determining how many special districts are going to provide services within those city limits for several reasons. One, there are administrative and cost efficiencies in having one provider. This more often than not results in property tax relief to city property owners. Two, there are regulatory issues that increase with having more than one provider, such as differing fire marshal standards within the same city that directly affect building code requirements. And even within the Dash 6 amendments, there's an inconsistency there that I want to revisit that really highlights that point. And third, cities have a legitimate interest in determining how many special districts would provide services within their territories because there are benefits to residents in ensuring a consistent level of service. Although the specific case that's before you today that gave rise to this legislation, you've heard that it's not about level of service. That may not always be the case in the future. Specifically, with regard to the regulatory issues, and one specific thing about the Dash 6 amendments that had stood out to me, is in their Section 8, which relates to the city's authority to designate the location and type of fire hydrants to be installed within the territory of a city when that city has been annexed. The proposed wording is, if all of a city has been annexed, then the city gets to set those standards. The amendment does not speak to what happens if there's a partial annexation, and it leaves that question open. Not only is that something that we think should be fixed in the Dash 6 amendments, again, it really highlights that issue that I spoke to earlier, that when it comes to a city's legitimate interest in ensuring consistent services throughout its territory, that having a uniform set of regulations, whether it be fire hydrant standards, fire marshal standards, or what have you, is a issue of local concern. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. Appreciate your time today.
Oksana.
I have to apologize. I put my name on the wrong sheet.
I'm sorry, what's that? You wanted to talk about a different bill?
Yes, okay. Yes.
Is this something we've already done?
No, it's the Wolf one. Yeah.
Okay,
Wolf.
Great, thank you. So I have just a couple questions for you. So your position is that while nobody, you know, you heard legislative council say they don't believe that's what was envisioned, that the statute was not envisioned for cities to gain a new power over refereeing between special districts. You believe there is some either legislative intent from the history in the 50s whenever that got put in, or now you see some value in having the cities play this role of special district on special district mediator, negotiator, blender, something.
Mr. Co-Chair, I want to give you a couple of remarks to that. We believe when you look at the full body of statutory authority, which in my memo to you really does present quite a bit of information, and I would draw your attention to that. It is all not in one chapter. It certainly does not follow along smoothly. But there is very specifically very express authority for cities to be able to deliver services inside their boundaries. We're not talking about outside the boundaries, inside the city boundaries, either directly through IGAs or through special district provision. Very clearly, it's indicated in the front page of my testimony.
Yeah, I have no dispute about IGA. I have no dispute about a city having a fire department. The question that Ledge Council was asked, what about not serving them in any manner, not doing an IGA, nothing, just withdrawing them and leaving them potentially just literally unserved? That's not what Kaiser's doing. But the statute on its face allows a city to withdraw someone from a fire service district and leave them with nothing, technically. I mean, it clearly doesn't have parameters around it, which is the point of the Dash 6 amendments. I obviously told you I understand you're going to oppose it no matter what. If you have improvements to the language, instead of being no, it's we're no, but if you are going to do it anyway against our opposition, you should at least do these things. I've heard a little bit of that sentiment today. That would be helpful to the legislative process. You can still be as opposed as you want, but if you have constructive suggestions, you should get them to us quickly.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, if I can respond briefly. You're right to note that certainly it would be absurd for the legislature to intend that a city could withdraw an area and have it be unserved. I think the issue really comes down to who provides that service. And in point in looking at other parts of the statutes, if you look at those parts of the statutes that deal with the initial incorporation of a city, it provides that the city can do so directly through IGA or through an understanding with a special service district who's going to serve that area and provide that service. Very much like the case before you, Kaiser's engaging here in selecting which service district is going to do that, which is why we submit that there's definitely room for disagreement on what the intent of that language was. Other parts of the statute, specifically the incorporation statutes, clearly allow a city to determine which special district is going to provide that service. We think that intent's carried over in the current language of 520.
Okay. Any questions for these nice people? Great. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So I neglected in the very first panel, Rhianne. I am so sorry I made you sit there this whole time. So would you please join us along with David Zahn, who I don't believe I've called yet, and Hasina Squires from Special Districts. Again, I'm very sorry.
Not a problem. Yeah.
Rhianne, please.
Okay. thank you, co-chairs Clem and Esquivel, and members of the committee. Thank you, representatives of our great state, for a moment to address my concerns. My name is Rhianne McDonald, and I am the executive director at Willamette Lutheran Retirement Community in Kaiser, Oregon. Our community has about 120 residents, senior residents, and 80 employees. We have used the services of both Marion County Fire District Number 1 and Kaiser Fire District on many an occasion. As a business sitting in the heart of the Clear Lake community, we are opposed to the forced annexation proposed. We are extremely happy with the emergency response and fire service we have had for the past 40 years and have asked for no change. I have been in service to Willamette Lutheran Retirement Community for the past 20 years, and I can tell you that in those 20 years, we have had nothing but exemplary service from both districts. Why would we want change? So why are we here in this situation we are all facing today? Simply put, it's money. It appears to me that it's the only gain. The removal of money from one resource from Marion County Fire District Number 1 and the gain of money into the resources of Kaiser Fire District. One fire district growing and one crippled for the other's growth. Let's look at the ripple that comes from throwing this rock. Other fire districts around our state are watching to see how this all plays out and if growth for their fire district can occur at the crippling of another district. The Clear Lake community has to accept the voice of what others think is best for them, not what they want. Marion County Fire District Number 1 will no longer have a strategically placed fire station to respond to emergencies on the west side of the railroad tracks, to respond to rural and Clear Lake calls as it does now. If we allow the overall state of our economy to sacrifice our ethics and goodwill towards man, one more time for monetary gain in hard times, why not look or work together for the gain of all? I can honestly say that I don't care about the politics. It's the lives of my residents that motivates me, and I know that the service we have now is providing them amazing professional care and services by both Marion County Fire District Number 1 and Kaiser Fire District. I thank you for your time and your consideration and ask you to adopt 4090-6 amendment.
Thank you. And for those of you here for the Wolves, as much as you may be angry with me over this, we're going to resume that portion at 5 p.m. tonight because obviously you're not going to get in before 3, so you're going to have to kill 2 hours somewhere around if you want to testify. I'm very sorry, but it's that or come back next Tuesday, and I figured this would be better for some of you who came from over 100 miles away to kill time for a couple hours. So I'm letting you know now, you come back at 5, please, if you can. And or submit it in writing or email or other options.
I could be here.
Back to Fire 101.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And
the committee members don't have to be here if you don't like, because I know you have other schedules. I will sit here. Public doesn't require a quorum.
Just a very quick question since you bring that up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. 5 o'clock, do you have any idea how long? I'll be here at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, sure.
This is an important issue, and I'll certainly be here. And I know it's to many people on my schedule.
We have 18 people testifying. 18 people, I'd say.
2 minutes each, and then in addition to questions.
Maybe
I just
want
to let you know I'll be able to stay an hour, and
okay,
I'm all in for the hour.
I think an hour is good. Please, sorry about that. Just want to let people off the hook here.
Certainly.
Yep.
Mr. Chair Clem and Chair Esquivel and members of the committee, I am David Zahn. I have spent the last 21 years as a volunteer firefighter with Marion County Fire District. I am currently the Clear Lake Station captain, and I live in the Kaiser, or I am a Kaiser resident. I have 21... firefighters under my command with two state-of-the-art fire engines, and as of May last year, we have a full-time 24/7 ambulance assigned to the Clear Lake Station. Adding a full-time ambulance has decreased response times not only in Clear Lake, but in the city of Kaiser. It is my understanding that the addition of an ambulance in Clear Lake has upset Kaiser Fire District, as they claim we have hurt their revenue and is in one of the bases for asking the city of Kaiser to take the steps they have to annex the Clear Lake area and hand it to the Kaiser Fire District. However, since May, a Marion County Fire District ambulance has been called into the Kaiser Fire District over 200 times.
David, sorry, I know I haven't interrupted anybody else, but we've got the written testimony,
sure. And
most of us aren't too interested in, like, you know, what happened before. We're kind of the larger policy question of having a special district take another one, whether you like it or not. Could you talk on that topic? And we don't care too much about the back and forth from the past. I'm sorry to say it like that, but
right.
I do. I live here, but most of the representatives aren't from this area, and they don't care too much about that part.
All right.
Sorry, I apologize. But.
Basically, just want to let the council know that we have worked side by side with the Kaiser Fire District over the last 21 years that I've been there. Since 1941, the two districts have worked together. Currently, the city of Kaiser is trying to take from one district to give it to another to fix its budget problems. Nobody in the Clear Lake community asked for this. And if you went out and talked to all of them like we did, this is not what the Clear Lake community wants. The letter that was written asking the Kaiser board to look into this came from a specific homeowners group, which I talked to most of the homeowners, and they had no idea this was going on. Chief Cowan said on that board.
Yeah, we don't want to get into this is a
broader
policy.
Sure. So most mine's in that letter that's there. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I apologize, but thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Coaches Clem and Esquivel, for the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association, here to testify in support of the Dash 6 Amendment, which really puts our association in somewhat of an ugly predicament with two districts warring against each other in this building. We have other examples, so I really want to make sure that the committee understands that our support for this amendment is meant to address statewide solutions for this issue. It is not meant to pick winners or losers. That's not what we're trying to do. So to that extent, the reason we support this amendment is that it clarifies what happens when a city withdraws from a district. Residents of an area that are going to be annexed have the right to know where their services will come from after annexation, to your point, Representative Clem. The provision that allows districts to annex portions of a city with the city's permission will assist both cities and districts. The cities gain because they can annex into areas where there is a strong loyalty to a special district. Residents will have the option of annexing back into the district if they choose, and this will remove a strong impediment against city annexations while also allowing successful districts to continue. And all of this happens only with the permission of the city. It's merely an option.
Any questions? I actually went back and listened. There was another bill back in February of last year about what happens when districts merge, and it had the word annexation. I got all paranoid about it, and I actually asked you, what is the process for when two special districts have an area that one has and the other likes? What's the process? And at the time, the answer was they have to both agree to do it, so we don't end up hearing about fights like this, because it had always required the consent. That meant one had to sweeten the pot enough. And then clearly a different potential avenue separate from what we all thought was the process is open. And I'm not commenting on the legality of it or not, because that's in front of the courts and we can decide that here, but do you think it would be helpful to not have additional, I'm sure it's not fun for you to have member-on-member conflict, but do you think it would be helpful, separate from the Kaiser situation, if we could put this genie back in the bottle and have the districts need to make an agreement if they're going to swap properties rather than litigate or vote or anything else?
Co-chairs Clem and Esquivel, members of the committee, that's precisely what the original bill, what I hope that my testimony got across, was this Senate Bill 122 agreement. What happened? Marion County hasn't adopted urban service agreements. We wouldn't have this problem. You enacted a bill, forced DLCD to make it happen.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, and my last two, I believe, are Randy Frankie and Chris Crane.
Someone coming in? Is there another committee?
We moved them down to another room.
Oh, you did? I love you.
Thanks.
So about 10 minutes. You can leave if you like now.
I cannot stay at 5.
Yeah, you can leave.
I cannot be here at 5
o'clock.
That's
fine. Okay. It's either that or the 100 milers have to come back in a week.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm very sorry. I hate to do this to two people, but I have another committee.
Some members have another committee. We've got just you two gentlemen, so 10 more minutes. But it's not that they don't care. They have another responsibility they have to go to.
Is my committee's meeting in here?
No, they've moved the committee to a different room. If we hurry, they might come in here, but they've been moved to another room.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Okay, sorry, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chair Clem, Chair Escobar, members of the committee. For the record, Chris Crane on behalf of Marion County Fire District Number 1. I don't know if some of you, I know we're here in 2005. I just thought I'd mention that in 2005, I served as general counsel to the Senate Environment and Land Use Committee when we discussed and deliberated the annexation bills arising out of the Beaverton situation. So I'm in private practice. All of my clients are municipal government, so I'm very, very familiar with annexation issues and special district issues. I want to very briefly, the statute the city relies on, 222-520, was adopted initially in 1947 as cities were, after the war, the cities were expanding quickly and out into rural areas and taking over services provided by urban service districts. The statute's been revised a little bit since then, but it's effectively the same in its structure and function. In 1971, the legislature adopted what is now ORS Chapter 198, the Special District Boundary Procedures Act, that set up a consistent uniform system for changing special district boundaries. So, I would beg to differ with Mr. O'Day, who said that the statutes are kind of all over the place. That's not the case. There is very clear structure in Chapter 198 for dealing with special district boundaries and how that occurs. The last colloquy between Representative Clem and Ms. Squires was part of that discussion, how special district boundaries change and how they have to come to agreement between them. City annexation, city boundaries are determined under ORS Chapter 222. It's a consistent and uniform system for dealing with city boundaries in one chapter, special district boundaries in another chapter, and what the city has done in this case is picked one statute from one and one statute from another, and they acknowledge in the hearings before the city council that this has never been, those statutes have never been used that way before. But they've opened Pandora's box. Junction City is now doing it, and there's no reason this has to be limited to fire districts. Cities can start changing school district boundaries, water district boundaries, any special district boundary they so choose, because as you heard Mr. Johnson say, they're just exercising their home rule authority. If that's true, they don't have to respect any special district boundary. They can determine who their service provider is at their whim. I think he's wrong. It's not home rule authority. The city has at all times acted to pursuant to its authority granted to it by statute. If the city wants to home rule authority, they need to create a fire department. That would fix their hydrant standards problems too. But the city doesn't want the expense or responsibility of actually operating a fire department, so they're going to rely on the special district, but at the same time tell us where our boundaries are and what our tax base can be. That's not the policy that the legislature adopted in 1947 and has followed since then. This business about service provider, thank you. As long as the cities provide services and they get paid for it in terms of property taxes, if a city collects property revenue for fire service or police service, for example, in Happy Valley, they're free to either provide that directly or contract with the county for that service. In either case, they are the service provider, and significantly, they can list that service as one of the services they provide when qualifying for state shared revenue. Cities have to certify what services they provide to qualify for state shared revenue, and you can list the service you provide as long as you collect the tax revenue for it, whether you provide it directly or by contract. And then finally, on this election issue, we, like Representative Clem, we implored the city, please don't put this on the ballot in March. You've got another election in May. Put it on the ballot in May. That would allow this legislature time to meet and weigh in. It would allow the courts time to weigh in, and then we would have a better sense of what everybody's responsibilities are, and you could still go ahead with the election in May. They declined that suggestion and rushed to put it on the ballot in March. If the legislature wants, this legislature wants to require a double majority so that the people of Clear Lake have a clear voice in their service provider, change the statute to require that, and then the city can put it on the ballot in May and still move forward. So that's our suggestion. I think that's how you can split the baby on the election issue. Thank you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Former Commissioner Frankie, sorry.
Thank you, Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Escobar, honorable members of the committee. My name is Randy Frankie. I'm the current president of the Marion County Fire District Number 1 Board of Directors. I live in the northeast Salem area, just outside the city limits. And I'm here in support of the Day 6 amendments for House Bill 4090. And I'll try to make my points very quick. I know you've been at this all day. First, we are not asking you to change the law, but clarify its intent. We're not asking you to change the rules. Again, we're asking you to clarify the original intent. It's interesting to me to note that, as several people arguing whether it's clear or not, yet every entity in this state of Oregon has followed what we argue is the original intent until now. No other city has tried to mix and match 222 and 198 like this before. So we're not asking to change the rules, we're asking to clarify those rules. I might add, by the city of Kaiser's action of cherry picking between 222 and 198, what they've done is they've denied the people who are most affected, who will be most impacted by this decision, to have no vote. The residents of Marin County Fire District 1 that will be left, if this goes forward, have no say. In 198, they get to vote. They have to have a say. The residents of Clear Lake, who are going to be most impacted on who provides this service and who do not want it and did not ask for it outside of that one homeowners association, have no real vote because they don't get the traditional double majority vote as in city annexations where they get a say and then the other side votes, and if they both agree, it happens. They're denied that vote because they're mixed in with the, what, five times at least, if not more, of the rest of the residents of the city who really don't have a stake in the outcome of this issue. What is happening, the way this is approached, is the city is acting as a boundary commission. All they're doing is changing the boundaries between two special districts and creating winners and losers, one gaining money, the other losing money, with no consideration for the impacts of the residents in Clear Lake, or no impact or consideration for the impact in the rest of the rural fire district, who could be very negatively impacted and hampered by this decision. And there will be job losses also if it goes through. The issues that were raised in terms of potential problems at fire hydrants and blah, 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 those can be resolved without this. There are ways to resolve those problems without what the city of Kaiser is doing. Run out of time. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Callan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Others give an opinion and sort of thinly disguised as a question, so I guess I can do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Today. I would respectfully suggest that when the legislature changes statute via a bill, we are changing the law. We are not determining intent. That intent is something that needs to be decided in other places. And I'm not going to get into dueling lawyers, but I'm struggling a little bit to understand how it could be that if we change statute via legislation, we're not changing the law.
Representative Chair Esquivel, Chair Clem, Representative Cowan, I, you know, as an attorney, I cringe a little bit when I heard that. But the sentiment is, I think, clear that, and this is what the conversation we had with a number of the stakeholders leading up to this, it's not the case, as Mr. Blackmore suggested, that this was just dropped on you guys without any discussion with stakeholders. We've had extensive discussion with stakeholders, and the argument we made is, we're not trying to change things. What we're trying to do is clarify what everybody thought the law was. As Mr. Franke said, every state and special district throughout the state has done it a particular way for years and years, based on the same statutes we're talking about now. Now, all of a sudden, one city goes off in a direction, and they say, oh, well, we're relying on statute. And everybody kind of scratches their head and says, that's not what those statutes say, or certainly not what they mean. And so what we're trying to do is clarify or add in the statute, the language everybody kind of always read into it in the first place.
Follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
That is, in fact, the challenge here and something that the courts are struggling to decide at this point. I know that there are a number of pending court decisions in this issue, not to mention a local vote. I have really been disappointed to hear the
comments that have been thrown back and forth at either side in what is obviously an extremely heated and difficult local decision and discussion process. It's the reason that the legislature, from my perspective, doesn't have a place stepping into an existing dispute and trying to figure out some fix for somebody. I think that we cannot put the genie back in the bottle, as was suggested. This is obviously a very complicated issue and not one that we can solve in a short session.
You have a question, or is this a work
session? No, I do not. I am taking the prerogative to state an opinion like every other member of this committee does, and I am finished now. Thank you.
The room is... Someone else wants the room is the problem. Sorry. So the only question I have is, again, I'd like to ask and make sure, you're the board president, I just want to ask and make sure, if we're trying to work out a solution to the existing situation, not reforming the underlying law effective, you know, immediately, reforming the underlying law effective later, we maybe revisit this issue next session. In your particular situation, the effective date is what makes these amendments apply to this situation, the one that Representative Cowan, I think, would prefer it not. Are you willing to live with the outcome of a Clear Lake only majority and a Kaiser Rural Fire voter only election? And the rest of Marion Fire wouldn't get to vote in this scenario, and the rest of Kaiser City wouldn't get to vote as city residents. They would vote instead as residents of Kaiser Rural Fire District only, but they wouldn't vote in two capacities. They'd vote in one. But, you know, that's the question.
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Escobal, honorable members of the committee, still with us. The answer, short answer is yes. We said we would. We told the Clear Lake residents we would abide by their wishes, decision, if we got a vote for them. And we told the City Council that was our request. Give them a shot. We will live with it.
And we took that position in court, by the way. I think that you could interpret the statute to reach that outcome, but the city declined to do so. So we're absolutely perfectly willing to live with that agreement.
One more thing I just want to get on the record. We have a copy of an editorial from your hometown newspaper out in Kaiser proposing, you know, nothing happened. This issue of somebody took somebody else's pre-existing funds. Are you willing to return to the status quo that existed where the other district would get essentially start receiving their money again that they believe kicked this off potentially?
Co-Chair Clem, Co-Chair Escobal. Yes, I think also in that is my public acceptance of that recommendation made by the Kaiser Times newspaper editorial. We said we were willing to reset the button, hold the Kaiser Fire District harmless in terms of whatever money they may lose from ambulance transports.
Okay.
For the record, that agreement was an IGA for ambulance services. It was not a Senate Bill 122 agreement.
Yeah. Most of us don't even know what that means, but
right.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's why I got it on the record. Nobody cares, but.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Any other questions for these two?
Thank you. Thank you for your attendance.
So I'm going to carry over the work session. That's the end of our list. Carry over work session on House Bill 4090.
And recess.
Am I not going to do the wolf people now 100 miles? Okay.
And
recess until 5 p.m. for the Wolf Bill, if you're still here for the Wolf Bill. 5 p.m. this room.